maybe I'll start with some comments on Anton and Benjamin's lecture. So the first comment is that, you know, my title is I Understand Alexeyev and da 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 da. And now I can change it that I don't understand. So I understood his lecture, but what I mean I don't understand is that I can't put it in my context yet. And for me, it's good news. It means good stuff to be found. Okay. So thank you, Anton. And now as for my context. I think my context, so this is a comment on Benjamin's lecture, I cannot reproduce any of your results, you know, it's definitely not in an hour, okay? But my sense is that definitely they fit in the same context, and they should be, and the best way to state them would be to state them in the same language. So I want to explain, and I also want to repeat my context in a slightly different way. So the context is you have a topological object, call it B. Why B? Because, or an algebraic structure which is a topological object, call it B. Why B? Because in the case of Benjamin's thing, it's the brain group. But it could be the elliptical brain group, it could be the parenthesized brain category, it could be any of a zillion other things. Okay? Whenever you have an algebraic object like that, you have the problem of whether there exists an expansion Z going from it to its progeny. For the brain group, it's a difficult question. Okay? It's, by the way, also a useful question. This is to answer some questions that people raise at lunch. So, basically, braids are hard, and braided algebras are easy. Because if you have a, at least in principle, because if you have a braided algebra, you can restrict your attention to degree less than 5, and then you have a finite thing. So, maybe it's not easy, but at least it has subspaces that are easy, or quotients that are easy, parts that are easy to manipulate. So if you have a question about braids, like, does a certain braid have a square root, you can translate it to questions over here whenever you have a homomorphic expansion. Okay? Now for braids, it's actually not terribly useful. But there are other contexts in which it makes more sense. Okay, when you talk about other types of topological objects, you know, it could be in principle used for braids as well, but braids are understood by other means even better. But there are other contexts in which having a homomorphic structure, a homomorphic expansion, would mean that you can translate questions from here to here, and here they could be easier.
Sorry, okay? You are speaking. So, probably about the pure braid, because for actual braids, the braided object is not interesting.
Yes, I'm not speaking about anything, I'm speaking the general picture. You're right, okay? But the next thing about this story is that, you know, the pure braid, or rather the braid group, has a natural, I don't know if natural, but a rather convenient generalization, which is the category of parenthesized braids. And if you put, and then of course there is the same question for parenthesized braids. And the moment I told you about parenthesized braids, I told you everything about Grothendieck, Teichmuller, and the two GRT groups, and the new word that I just learned, which is torsor. So I told you everything about torsors. Why? Because the moment I told you what this is, the question automatically arises whether there are homomorphic expansions going from here to here. This is precisely the target space on which associators are defined. And in fact, the question, is there a homomorphic expansion going from here to here, is, well, you write this as in terms of generators and relations, and the generator should be going to some element here, And the relation must be going to relations here, and this turned out to be an associator and the pentagon and the hexagon, respectively. Okay? So an associator is a homomorphic expansion going from here to here. And in fact, this is the best way to view associators. Associators are not funny algebraic objects that occur in the third tensor power of something, but rather they are homomorphisms going from here to here. The moment you say this, the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group is automatic. Because if you have a homomorphism, you may have many homomorphisms, and the set of all associators, of all homomorphisms, which is the set of all homomorphisms, which Benjamin calls M1, is automatically a torsor, because there are automatically two group actions acting on it. Meaning, a group acting on the left called GT, which is the automorphisms of this group, and a group acting on the right called GRT, which are the automorphisms of this object. And those actions are automatically torsors, I mean, as simple transitive actions, right? Because it's obvious, right? The set of homomorphisms between two objects is obviously a homogeneous space of the automorphisms of the first and the automorphisms of the other, okay? And then all of the complicated formulas don't come out of thin air. The moment you specify generators and relations, all the complicated formulas follow automatically. They're forced on you. They don't require any creativity whatsoever, okay? Now, furthermore, suppose now you had another algebraic structure. So, parenthesized elliptic braids, okay? I don't know what these are, okay? Because, you know, I only learned about them an hour ago, so I can't write what they are. But then you have a similar question over there, and automatically it will come with all the same structure, and again you don't need to say anything. And furthermore, if there are maps from here to here, you can think of the combined object as a single algebraic structure, and you can look for expansions for the combined object, and that would be exactly a pair of an associator here and an elliptic associator here, which are in correspondence. So everything should, you know, I think everything in this language would appear more natural. But this is a speculation, and maybe I'm right, and maybe I'm wrong, and you know, let's wait a year or two and see what happens.
You should be right.
Okay, anyway, so back to, sorry, I hope I didn't, oh, maybe I should say that my plan was to give my two talks, and then leave the third one open for a random direction. Wherever you tell me to go, I'll go. Obviously, I'm behind. I really hope it will happen, but I'm not sure there is any chance. I now took another piece of my time. Anyway, back to my story. So I think I already told you I already reviewed a good chunk of the story. So, about this part, okay? But now let me remind you what is the specific algebraic structure that I want to use today. By the way, that algebraic structure would also have a GT and a GRT. I'm not mentioning it anywhere because I'm not using them. But they automatically come, okay? But anyway, my algebraic structure at the moment is the circuit algebra of W tangles, and these are four-dimensional objects, but it's actually easier to think of them in as diagrams in the plane with some relations. And here they are. Okay. This said, I also said I believe that there is an expansion. So the problem is there an expansion? In fact, even a homomorphic expansion is solved. Namely, you simply map every crossing to an exponential of chords. Chords live on this side, crossings live on this side, since the crossings in fact generate this side, So if I told you where the generators go, I've defined a homomorphic expansion, right? And then I extend it to be a homomorphic, right? To define a homomorphic expansion, you just need to know where the generators go, and then you extend it using the algebraic operations. So here is a homomorphic expansion. Of course, you have to verify the relations, and here is the verification of Rademeister 3. Okay, so the issue of whether there is a map going from here to here has been settled right now. I just told you what it is. Okay? Now comes another issue, and the other issue is whether it's interesting. Okay? So is the target space at all interesting? Maybe the target space, so arrow diagrams, so maybe I should remind you what the target space is. So the target space is arrow diagrams. So over here I have diagrams which are made of strands and purple arrows going between them. And the degree is the number of purple arrows, so it's a graded space. And modulo relations, and the relations are written over here. Okay? Well, now you can fairly ask, is it interesting? And it's interesting if the target space is interesting. Okay? So let me tell you what the target space is. First of all, I need to speak about the bracket rise theorem. It's where brackets rise from nowhere. Okay? And I don't have a good a priori reasoning for why the bracket rise theorem should hold. If I was Kazuo Habiro, I would probably have such a reasoning. But I'm not. I guess what I'm saying is that somebody else knows topology a lot better than me. Okay? But anyway, here is the statement. The statement is that A omega of one strand, and likewise for three strands, so one strand would have one skeleton line at the bottom, for three strands we just have three skeleton lines, okay? But A omega, AW of one strand is isomorphic to the space of diagrams like this, modulo STU anti-symmetry and IHX relation, which are written over here. Now, I'd better explain. So these are diagrams made out of purple arrows, but in addition to the vertices that I allowed before, I also allow internal vertices, like this one and that one and that one. And the vertices are always of the form 2 in, 1 out. Okay, so two incoming arrows and one outgoing edges, arrow out of each vertex. And no isolated purple, so no connected components in which the purple cannot connect back to the skeleton, to the blue skeleton. Okay? And then the relations are an STU relation, the STU relations, so stated over here. So if you have a vertex connected by an arrow to the skeleton, you can replace it by essentially the commutator of the two ways of connecting the endpoints directly to the skeleton. There is likewise an STU2 relation, which tells you that if you want to commute an arrow head with an arrow tail, the price is a trivalent vertex presented as that. There is a third STU relation, which says that if you want to commute two arrow tails, well, I already told you that the commutator of two arrow tails is zero. So the left-hand side is zero, so this is really the tails commute relation of before. And finally, there is an IHX relation, which says that if you want to connect two internal vertices, there are three ways to do so, while keeping the endpoints with the same orientation, so consistently with the orientation, and the sum of the three ways with appropriate signs is equal to zero. Finally, there is the anti-symmetry relation, which I didn't state, which says that, well, these really should have an orientation. At each point, there is a left and a right, and if you flip left and right, you flip a sign. Okay? So, proof of the bracket rise theorem. Well, here is a sketch of the proof. This proof is not much harder. So basically, suppose you have an internal vertex. I want to get rid of it. I want to go to diagrams that have no internal vertices. There are two ways to do it. I could either use the STO relation number one. You see here I have a vertex connected by an arrowhead to the skeleton. So I'll get these two. Or I could use STU relation number two. And again, if you compare STU two over here to the picture here, you'll get the right-hand side. Okay? Now, a priori, these are two different arrow diagrams. But the 4T relation is exactly the relation that these two are equal. So therefore, this reduction map that reduces internal vertices to the skeleton is well defined. And if you push it a little further, you find that the theorem holds. But this is the key point. This is the everything else is just silly induction. Okay? Now so what do I get from that? I get two corollaries.
AS stands for anti-symmetry, right? AS relation. AS means anti-symmetry.
AS is anti-symmetry.
What does it mean, STU?
STU, you mean what is the historical?
Silly.
It's just a choice, a random three letters. I'm actually lying, okay? It's not random. So, you know, in quantum field theory, there is S channel scattering, T channel scattering, and U channel scattering. And the diagrams for them are exactly the same as the diagrams for IHX. But it would be silly to call IHX STU, right? Because it looks like IHNX. So I told you it was silly. Okay? Sorry, the history is silly. It has no meaning. Okay? Anyway, so what's the benefit? Two benefits. First one is that it's related to Lie algebras. Clearly. Now the relationship with Lie algebra finally arises. Okay? And the second one we'll come to later. So, how is it related to the algebras? Well, clearly, this looks like a bracket, right? The bracket is equal to a commutator. Furthermore, if you look at the IHX relation, it looks like PPW, not PPW, like Jacobi, right? The sum, if you take the bracket of two brackets, sorry, the bracket of a bracket, it's equal to the bracket of another bracket. Three ways of combining two brackets give zero. Okay, and if you look, if you put signs, everything matches. This is the Jacobi relation. Okay, you can actually make it more concrete. You don't need it in order to understand the relation with Alexeyev-Torossian. But I'm going to tell you, you don't need. But it's a must. You really have to understand it. Otherwise, it's sort of disoriented. Okay, so here is a claim. First of all, given any Lie algebra G, you can construct what I will call IG, the inhomogeneous version of G. And this is G semi-direct product G-dual. You take G-dual as an abelian Lie algebra, and G acts on it, so you can form the semi-direct product and call it IG. The standard example is, well, if you start from SO3, its Lie algebra is R3, it acts on its Lie algebra, on the dual of its Lie algebra via rotations. So this is the semi-direct product of rotations with translations, and that's the inhomogeneous symmetry group of Euclidean geometry. So that's the meaning of IG. And now I claim that given any finite dimensional Lie algebra, I can construct a map from arrow diagrams to the universal enveloping algebra. And if you had arrow diagram on a skeleton with several components, so if you have an arrow diagram on a skeleton with three components, now there are also arrows here, it would go to the universal enveloping algebra of IG, tensor 3. Okay? How do you do that? Well, you choose a basis, xi for the Lie algebra, and the dual basis phi j for the dual Lie algebra. You let bijk be the structure constants. You label every arrow with a lowercase Latin letter. So ijknm, it would work with Greek letters just as well. Okay? And then you write the structure constants near every internal vertex. So this vertex is surrounded by L, K, and M. So you write B, K, L, M. Okay? And down at the bottom, you write a list of what you see. So if you see an outgoing arrow, you put something in the abelian algebra. So you put, right, because outgoing arrows should commute. So so tails should commute. So you put a dual letter. And here you see a J, and here you see an arrow head with label M. So you put an XM. And then you form an expression. And the expression is, you take the product of all the structure constants that you saw times the product of the phi's and the x's in the order they are written along the skeleton. So phi I, phi j, xn, xm, phi n, phi l. And you sum over all the indices going from one to the dimension. And the result is some element as promised in the universal enveloping algebra of G dual semi-direct product G. Claim it is well defined. So claim, when you do this, the IHX relation becomes the Jacobi identity between brackets. My computer is still broken, by the way. It's scrolling so slowly, I don't know what is going on. The STU relation becomes the defining relation of a universal enveloping algebra, and basically everything works. Okay? So really, this is a combinatorial model to the universal enveloping algebra of IG for any G, for all Gs at the same time, if you wish. Okay, that's one statement that is good to know. And here is another statement that is good to know, which I first learned from Kontsevich in a different context. So this is the combinatorial analog, the diagrammatic analog of the Poincaré-Birkhoff-Witt theorem, which says that the universal enveloping algebra is isomorphic to the symmetric algebra as vector spaces, not as algebras. I'm not making any assertion about algebras at the moment. Okay? So, basically, if you look at the picture before, the role of the line is to order the stuff that appears in the universal enveloping algebra. The symmetric algebra is obtained, if you get it, by not ordering stuff. Okay? And you also drop all the order-related relations. So you drop, right, the order-related relations are relations like the bracket of x and y is equal to x1 minus yx. In the symmetric algebra, you drop it. It doesn't make sense anymore. Okay? So basically, you do the same at the level of diagrams. So instead of diagrams with a skeleton, you look at diagrams whose ends are into thin air, okay? But in fact, they should be marked by which thin air they go to. Because you see, the statement is that the universal enveloping to tensor to the n is equal to the symmetric part to tensor to the n. So you basically have to say which you, for each leg, you have to say which universal algebra, which symmetric algebra it corresponds to. So this one will go to number one, this one will go to number two, this one will go to number one. Now, legs labeled by one are symmetrized. Okay, they go into thin air and all thin air is equivalent. Okay? So, in other words, you look at unitrivalent graphs made out of arrows in which you look only at two in, one out vertices. You label the univalent vertices by 1 through n, and you mod out, well, you no longer mod out by the STO relation, however, you still mod out by Jacobi. Okay? And the claim is that these two are isomorphic. Okay? This said, we fully understand Bn, right? Bn is isomorphic to A of n strands, and now I fully understand Bn. Why? Because the only diagrams that you can construct out with vertices that have two in and one out are trees and wheels and circles. Okay? So the only diagrams you can make with the given vertices are necessarily trees and circles. Well, in fact, there is one other time. The other type is you could have a wheel oriented, of course, and then, well, it has spokes, but one of the spokes, or maybe more than one of the spokes, could itself has a tree embedded on it. But if you have, if you see a thing like that, you can use IHX, so you use IHX around this edge to collapse the rest towards the skeleton. So in other words, if the lower part here, right, if you have, suppose this is a part of a wheel, okay, and you have a tree on top of the wheel, you can collapse it, you can make you can break the tree into two branches at the cost of making the wheel a bit longer, okay? So modulo IHX, all that you have left is trees and wheels, okay? So therefore, and in fact, if you look at it a little harder, and you restrict your attention to primitives, so primitives are connected diagrams, and right, every diagram is a disjoint union of connected diagrams, so if you understand the connected diagram, you understood the whole thing. Anyway, if you restrict your attention to the primitives, you just found that the primitives are wheels direct sum trees, but more precisely, the primitives are, well, okay, this is a Lie algebra, because first of all, it's an algebra. An is an algebra. Well, and the algebra structure is inherited from the circuit algebra structure that you started from, but anyway, An omega is an algebra because if you have two elements, here is one with some arrows, and another one, you can multiply them by putting one on top of the other. So you will have this one and on top of it that one. So it's an algebra. And therefore, its primitives are a Lie algebra. In other words, if you have connected diagrams, you can look at their look at their brackets, so you can multiply them in one way, minus multiply them the other way, and you can show that the difference will be a sum of connected diagrams. So so this space is a Lie algebra, and I claim that it's a semi-direct product of wheels considered as an abelian Lie algebra, and the quotient of this by wheels, which would be just the trees, and this is a non-abelian Lie algebra. Furthermore, trees act on wheels. Okay? Now what? Sorry, I don't know what is going on. How is the, okay, and furthermore, this is a split sequence. Namely, you can go back from trees to here. Okay? In fact, there are two ways to go back from trees to here. In fact, there are more than two, but there are two special ways to go from trees to diagrams like this. Namely, suppose you have an abstract tree, there are two ways, two inequivalent ways to map it into diagrams with a skeleton. So this is a tree with two colors at the, on its legs. There are two ways to map it into diagrams with skeleton two lines, into A2, okay? One way is to put the upper way, is to put the head at the top, and the other way is to put the, so this would be the upper map, and there is also the lower map in which you put the head at the bottom, okay? So the moral is that prog of K omega is isomorphic to, well, okay, if I now allow you to take not just primitives, but I want you to look at the whole thing, you get the universal enveloping algebra of trees, semi-direct product, wheels. Okay? Now, I claim that this is precisely the Alexeyev-Torossian setup. So, oops, sorry, this came with no real reason. And the real reason was, this is sort of the best picture I could find, sorry, the best picture I could find to illustrate trees and on top of a wheel, growing a tree from a wheel or something. Anyway, just silly. I think all of these notions were already defined by Anton, so I don't need to review them, basically An is the vector space with the n-dimensional vector space. Li N is the freely algebra on N generator, so it's the Li algebra on An, the freely algebra on An. ASSN is its universal enveloping algebra. TerN is the positive part of the ASSN, so the, excluding the constant, so degree higher than zero. Modulo the relation that you can cyclically translate a word. And there is a trace from ASSN into TerN. Again, this is the same trace that Anton talked about. There is something called T der N. So T der N is derivations of the freely algebra on N symbols, which have the additional property that every generator is mapped to a conjugate of itself. So for every xi, there is an ai, so that D of xi is equal to the bracket of xi with ai. And finally, there is some mysterious map div, which goes from T der n to ter n. And the definition was given by Alexeyev in his talk, but let me tell you what it really is in my language. Okay, so in my language, here are two ways to view it. Okay? So one way is to say, well, first of all, TerN is simply the space of all wheels, which, as I said, right, they are labeled with labels 1, 2, 3, 1, you know, repeating label. So they're exactly elements of the associative algebra up to cyclic symmetry. T der n is really, so an element of T der n is specified by n elements of the freely algebra, right? The things you bracket with, okay? So up to a minor issue in degree one, which allow me to skip, so this is more or less, you know, up to a minor issue, which is more stated more precisely in the handout, this is the direct sum, right? Each of these elements is in itself an element of the freely algebra. So up to a minor issue, this is a sum of n copies of the freely algebra, okay? Except this is as a vector space. The Lie algebra structure is more complicated. It's not just the direct sum of Lie algebras. Okay? But you see, I claim that this is the same as what I call trees. Well, what are my trees? My trees look like, trees. The tails are labeled. But the head is also labeled, okay? And then you mod out by IHX. In principle, a tree modulo IHX with the tails labeled is an element of the freely algebra. The labeling of the head is the additional bit of information which tells you which of the summons here this element belongs to. Okay? So this tree would be, so this tree would correspond to the bracket of 1 and 2, bracket the bracket of 3 and 1, regarded as an element of the second summon. So this would be the A2, the A1 would be 0, and the A3 would be 0. Okay? But since I allow linear combinations of trees, I also allow all other elements, all other sequences like that. Now, what is div? So there are, here is the Alexeyev definition of div, slightly rephrased. And then I'll tell you what it is in my language. So Alexeyev says that div is the following. So div of a tree, in fact, okay, let's take 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, is the following. You look at the sum of always, all ways of connecting the head near one of the tails which are of the same color. So, like one summand would be this summand. Okay? But now you have a wheel. Okay? In this picture, I've generated a wheel. Okay? A cycle. And on this cycle, there are trees planted. Get rid of these trees using IHX, and you got an element in turn 3, or in wheels. Okay? So this is div. Okay? And in my language, div is even simpler. Namely, as I told you before, there are two ways to go from here. There are two splittings to this sequence. The difference of two splittings is a cocycle. That's it. Said differently, if you have a tree, you map, you look at up of that tree, or the upper map of this tree, the lower map of this tree. So in other words, you look at this minus that, sorry, and that. You look at their difference. The difference is in the image of iota, so it's in the image of a wheel, and that wheel is div, okay? So div measures the difference between these two embeddings, okay? Now, where was I? How much time do I have? I forgot to turn on my timer, so.
I think
10 or 15, okay. So maybe I'll give you yet another interpretation of, I'm going sketchy at the moment, I'm sorry. So, I mean, I will not tell you what J is, the J that Alexeyev and Torossian defined, but I'll also tell you that, I'll only tell you that it has a reasonably natural meaning. In other words, it just, you know what, let me tell you, it just measures the difference between the same thing at the level of exponential. So you, if you take a tree, it's e to the u of that tree multiplied by e to the negative l of that tree. That turns out to be the exponential of a wheel, of a sum of wheels, and this sum of wheels is what you call j. Okay, it's the thing that Alexeyev and Torossian call j. And maybe I'll give yet another interpretation. So you see, the universal enveloping algebra of IG can be interpreted as tangential differential operators on fun G. So fun G is functions on the Lie algebra G. And a tangential differential operator is a differential operator in which all the derivations are in the direction of the orbits of the G action. Okay? So, an element of the, so I want to tell you that U of IG is a tangential differential operator, I have to tell you where element of G dual go and where elements of G go. So elements of G dual are just functions on the Lie algebra, so they become multiplication operators, and elements of G generate infinitesimal rotations of the Lie algebra, so therefore derivations, differential operators, vector fields, And that's what an element of G goes to. And you can check that the relations between the commutation relations between phis and x's and between x's and themselves are exactly the commutation relations of this universal enveloping algebra. So therefore, the universal enveloping algebra maps into functions on G. Differential operators on functions on G. Furthermore, if you look at a tree, it turns out that U of D, the map that converts the differential operator U of D to the differential operator L of D is precisely mapping a differential operator to its adjoint. Okay? Or rather, D is just, since it's a differential, so a tree is a differential operator with many functions coefficients and only one differentiation head, so it's really a vector field. So it's really the map which maps a vector field to its adjoint. Okay? But you see, the divergence of a vector field is precisely the difference between the vector field and its adjoint. So D really is the divergence of a vector field. And there is likewise an interpretation for J. If you exponentiate a vector field on a algebra or anything, you get the flow. Now, the flow may be measure preserving. In this case, J would be zero, it would be one. Sorry, zero because it's the log of this. But in general, if you have a vector, a flow, then the flow might be compressing the measure or expanding the measure. And J measures the log of that. Okay? So everything makes sense. I think I want to skip the little topic of special derivations, even though it makes sense as well. I think I also want to skip the Alexander theorem, which will tell you that that invariant, when restricted to knots, so if you restrict your attention to knots, you only have wheels to study, because all the trees would have to be labeled by the same labels, all the leaves would have to be labeled by the same label, therefore it would have to vanish. So you only have wheels to study, and in terms of wheels, you find that the Alexander polynomial is, this universal invariant is precisely the Alexander polynomial. Again, I want to skip it and only say that it's a better than the usual Alexander invariant. It has some extremely good properties when you extend it to tangles. So that's the end of my first talk. And I'm sorry that I went very, very, very sketchy at the end. And now it's a test for my computer whether I will be able to switch to the second talk without crashing. No? I don't know what is going on. Working. Good. So, okay. Let me stop for a minute and tell you where we are. Really, if you look at the algebra that I described, a different way of, or a different name for it, would be W tangles on N skeleton lines. Okay? I told you that there is a homomorphic expansion defined on this, and with values in its projectivization, which is AW of N lines, and I've defined what this is also. And I also told you what Z is. So far, it's a very easy problem. In fact, it's been solved. Right? The solution is take the Z that I told you about. The algebraic problem, so this case is completely analyzed, and the algebraic problem, the only algebraic problem that you had to solve is to find this Z, and finding Z ended up being finding the exponential function. So the algebraic problem, the thing that solves the Rademeister rules is the exponential function, and that's not much of a great discovery. Okay? But it turns out that if you extend W tangles a little bit, the problem becomes much harder and much more interesting. Okay? So extend W tangles to what I will call W trivalent tangles, which are tangles in which you also allow internal trivalent vertices, in which you also allow trivalent vertices. So instead of WT, you look at WTT, which is W trivalent tangles. This is the circuit algebra with generator relations, and later I will tell you that it also has additional operations beyond the operations of a circuit algebra. And the generators are, well, the same generator as before, and two new generators. And why, oh, maybe I should just move to the next picture, then it will be visible. So the two new generators are a trivalent vertex. So the two-dimensional marking of it is this. Thinking of thickened ribbons, it will be this picture. And thinking as flying rings in R3, it's this picture over here. But notice that it's a singular picture. There is a singularity over the equator here. So let me explain what this is topologically. So topologically, what it is, here is a tube, sorry, here is a ring. The ring is flying around in R3, and at some point, in a singular way, it just splits into two, and the two fly in different directions. Okay, so that's the vertex. This is not the same as the smooth vertex, which is the pair of pans vertex, which is just the usual thing that appears in topology. This is different. This is singular. It's what I care. I don't care about the smooth vertex. The smooth vertex would be, I'm only telling you because I don't care, but the smooth vertex would be, you have a big ring flying around. At some point, it sort of hits itself and becomes two separate rings. That's a different thing, and it's not the thing I care about. It has a role in the theory, but relatively minor, so I definitely don't want to talk about it. But there are other new gadgets that I want to insert into WTT. One is a cup. So you can just, a cup, okay? So if you have a tube, you can cup it. In the ring work picture, you have a big ring, it flies and meanwhile shrinks until it becomes a point and then it's nothing. Okay? So this I do need. And the other one is a wen. A wen is really a piece of a Klein ball. Okay? So here is a Klein ball, and you can think of it as a flying ring which flies and somehow turns around, flies back. Again, I wish I had more time to describe what wens are, but I don't. But it's really just a piece of a Klein ball. Now, what are the relations? Well, you know, I could tell you that the relations are just that this diagram is equivalent to that, but not equivalent to that. And this one is equivalent to that, but this one is equivalent to that. I could just tell you everything in planar terms, if I wish. But all of these things also have a three-dimensional meaning. So, for example, if you have an overcrossing near a cup, then you can push it to the other side of the cup. Okay? And here is sort of a more suggestive picture. This is equivalent to that. However, if you have an undercrossing near a cup, this kind of means that, you know, think you have you've spiked the neck, you can't just pull it through the cup. Right? So this, sorry for the colorful imagery, but this is the fact that you cannot do that you break the symmetry between under and over, but the topology dictates that you break the symmetry between under and over. Okay? Likewise with wens, it turns out that if you slide through things one way through a Klein ball, they come out okay, and if you slide them the other way, they come out twisted. Okay? I'll skip the comment about the Reitemeister. And, oh, sorry, I should have said that there are also relations for the most interesting new object, which is this trivalent vertex. And the relations are exactly what you would think. Namely, there are the Reitemeister 4 relation. So if you have this, it's equal to that, and likewise for overcrossings. So for both types of crossings. Okay? Then you look at the corresponding then you have also unary operations. So if you have a tube connecting two singularities, you can so-called unzip it. This is the parallel of a one-dimensional, an operation in 3D knot theory. So in 3D knot theory, if you have a knotted edge, so here is an edge and it's knotted, not in a terribly interesting way, you can always replace it by two parallel edges that do the same thing. Okay, this is the unzip, because it's like unzipping a zipper, right? So you can also do it one dimension up. If you have a tube, you can turn it into two parallel tubes, one inside the other. This is the picture shown here, and the parameter space, it just looks like this now. Okay, but if this was knotted, this would be knotted too. The two things would be knotted too. And that would be an annulus unzip, because the tube is really a long annulus. But there is also a disk unzip. So if you have a tube and you cap it, this is topologically a disk, and you can replace it by two parallel disks. So this is this picture shown here, and that's another unary operation you can have. Now, you do the exact same analysis as before, and you have a new space of arrow diagrams. I'm over? Over. Okay. 1 minute. Basically, you get a new space of arrow diagrams. You have to solve the, to find the Z, you have to solve, well, you have to find the value. If you want a homomorphic Z, you have to find the value of a crossing. That's an exponential, as I said before, but also the value of a vertex. Call it V. V has to satisfy equations, essentially the equations that correspond to the moves that it has to obey. So three equations, you look at these three equations, and these equations very quickly can be translated to be precisely the Alexeyev-Torossian equations that are corresponding to the Kashiwara-Verne statement. Now, I don't have any more time, apparently, but if I did, I would have told you that the story of associators has a similar formulation in terms of trivalent, knotted trivalent graphs. And furthermore, since there are maps between 3 and 4 dimensions, and the surprising thing is that there is also somehow a map backwards, the two theories are, I wouldn't say equivalent, but related. Okay, and the relation can be made specific, explicit. Okay, so I still have one more lecture. And in my last lecture, I will do what you tell me to do. Okay? So I can either give all the details that I missed now, or if you flip on my handout, I could instead tell you my view of how Kashiwara-Verne is directly related to convolutions on Lie algebras, sort of straight from knot theory to convolutions on Lie groups and Lie algebras. Or I could tell you more on the Alexander polynomial, or I could tell you more about the case we don't understand, which is the V case. Or I could tell you more about how this is potentially useful. This is the story of algebraic knot theory, and how a homomorphic expansion could potentially be useful. I think I don't want to tell you more about the handout by my student Zhuji Dancho related to Ferruccio, or I could tell you how all of this is related to physics. This is the last page. I'll do what I'm told. I obey orders, except the orders related to time.
Okay, thank you. question for tomorrow? If you have a short one.
Tomorrow is definitely question. Yes. So that's what tomorrow is.
Thank you.